Welcome back, everybody. It is late March, and we have two new House of the Dragon trailers.
The Greens versus the Blacks.
By God, what are you doing, HBO? Caesar and Gladiator right now? Good, bad? What do you think?
I do think it's interesting that HBO is really trying to pit the Greens and the Blacks against each other. Mm. I think especially coming into this storyline where, frankly, the lines get more and more blurred between who is right and wrong, I guess, who's morally whatever.
Yeah.
So I think that the which side are you on? Is it the Greens or the Blacks? Is so interesting. And HBO tried to do this for a long time with Game of Thrones. Like, are you a Stark or are you a Lannister? And it's like, okay, that doesn't really work because there's a way easier left or right side when it comes to House of the Dragon. And so it makes sense that they're playing it up so much because it's a very easy marketing tactic. But it's going to be interesting going into season two, what we know about it from Fire and Blood. Like I said, as the lines get blurrier, maybe that's the whole thing. So I don't know. I just found it to be very interesting. It's fun. I think it's fun. We got two trailers out of it, so it's fun.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the trailers shared a lot of the same stuff.
And the Greens trailer was mostly about the Blacks, but okay.
Called a marketing tactic, fine. I think that takes a little bit of the warmth out of it.
You do?
Yeah, I think that this is a really awesome thing because whenever we get promoted stuff, it's usually to take our money away from us. Mm-hmm. And this is a business at the end of the day, but try to keep the same mind when interacting with these stories that I did when I was a kid. And even though it's a business and someone has to make money at the end of the day, clearly you can't make a piece of art that's this deep and that's this rich if you're just trying to cash in the paycheck.
Of course.
And so things that were like cool when we were kids that we like used as rallying points came out of stuff that was popular enough for the money people to give it this much love, care, and attention. Some things broke through on their own. Some things were set up to be successful, like the Marvel movies. You know, we were like already ready for midnight releases by the time the fire started to catch with that stuff. But even before our time, there were like works of art or stories or movies, comics, books, etc., that made people do things differently. Tech releases that made people stand outside of Apple stores waiting for a new iPhone release. Like the stuff that it's almost like the way that the nature of the universe normally works, something's like breaking that code a little bit. And I think that that's what two trailers is right now. It's breaking the code a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's like House of the Dragon's popular enough for them to do something creative with the release. It's something that they've tried to do. When I say they, I mean HBO, the folks at HBO, the agencies that they hired to carry out this stuff. It's cool when something's popular enough that it's like, all right, we can do a little bit of extra sauce with it. Mm. We've seen it amalgamate and like splitting a final book into two movies. And I think it was also pretty interesting that and pointed that they decided to drop both of these trailers on the day that David and Dan, the showrunners of GOT's new Netflix show, came out on Netflix, the same day that these two trailers dropped.
You think that was on purpose?
I think that the views are an interesting thing to look at. If you look at how many views the Black trailer got, how many views the Green trailer got versus the first day of Three Body Problem on Netflix.
That's why I think it's so interesting that they're pushing it so hard going into season two, because I do think like the end of season one was pretty ambiguous on whose side we were supposed to be on. The thing that is interesting without like getting into too much detail, but if you've read Fire and Blood, the thing that's interesting about season two is how both sides make pretty egregious decisions because both sides have been hurt pretty intensely by people that they love. And so one interesting thing is going to be people's reaction to which side they fall on. Because I do think like in terms of like fan community, there is like a decent, healthy debate between the two. Like, it's not very clear-sided, from my perspective, of, like, who we're supposed to be, quote-unquote, rooting for. And I think that, especially with the TV show, like, both sides were painted pretty, not kindly isn't the word I'm thinking of, but we got to pick. Like, there wasn't a right or wrong side. It's morally ambiguous.
Yeah, it was written pretty balanced.
Yeah, it was, yeah, balanced is the word I'm thinking of. And so, I think that just looking ahead to some of the decisions, and even like
except for the vibes, just
well, except for the vibes. But I mean, even look at the end of season one with the Luke's death, you know, which in the book read to me as pretty like pointed and on purpose.
Yeah,
and in the TV show, looked like an accident almost, and it looked like a decision that he didn't regret necessarily, but felt some sort of way about. And so I think that seeing a lot of the humanity behind a lot of these, in my opinion, kind of wild choices that are either made on purpose or on accident by both sides, mm-hmm. is going to be particularly potentially polarizing. And so it may make people switch sides. Yeah, and so that was really like one of the things that I was thinking about as I was watching the trailer, and as I was thinking about these two trailers.
Especially after episode one.
Yeah, they're really pitching which side are you on. But I think that a lot of people who are maybe casual or people who, any of us, we don't have to like be mean to the casual people, might, you know, our opinions might change. And I think about like all the characters in season one that we did not care about, Viserys, going into it, who are now like our kings, like our favorite people, that because of the way they were portrayed and written and played, all that kind of stuff. And so I'm looking forward to seeing some of these like blood and cheese instances.
Yeah.
How does that affect the way we think about these characters, and how does seeing it on screen affect the way that we're thinking about these characters, and how will HBO continue to pitch this greens versus blacks, if at all, throughout season two? So
we talked about this on our last episode, the dynamic of Fire and Blood versus the dynamic of the story playing out in House of the Dragon. And I love that scenario with Aemond and Luke in the sky that you just called out, because it's really perfectly sums up how we're sort of switching the normal setup of book adaptations for screen, where the book was written from Archmaester Gildane's perspective. The whole book is in a historical context being retold from some kind of a third party, not from a storyteller who's reading you the book at the end of the night before mm-hmm. you go to sleep. This is the story, and this is the way that it was shaped in order to paint an impression upon you. That's not the case with Fire and Blood. So with Hot D, what we're seeing is also really not that, not really the storybook being read to you. It's like TV shows are almost like you're watching a documentary, an artistic retelling of the truth. Like there's a camera in the room when it really happened. And so that moment with Aemon in the sky of him being like, don't do it, don't do it. And then Vhagar does kill the boy and his dragon, and we see his reaction. You're able to come away between season one and season two. I know that he just did that really bad thing, but if you're more in the vibe with Aemon's vibe than what Rhaenyra's family's got going on, then maybe you don't feel as hurt by his murderous decision. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're really bad and you're like, I don't care if he killed that kid. It's war. Right. There's all different types of people that are watching this and that are interacting with the story, so they might pull away different things. But something as black and white as the way that it's written in Fire and Blood, it's difficult to really pull away a feeling from it. Mm-hmm. That's the function of that book. You're supposed to make up what the third party might be leaving out in your head. But here, there's no, like you said, options left on the table, because we're going to see the intricacies of how each of those decisions were played out. So interesting for non-casual folks, because normally they come into situations like this, superior at the water cooler, and it's interesting how other people are reacting to it, especially being released on a weekly basis because they don't have all the information yet. But in this case, people who have read Fire and Blood 15 times still don't really know how episode one, how Blood and Cheese will play out.
You think about something also too, like Harrenhal. You know, like we have some pretty big character moments that we're coming up on this season, and pretty big character deaths, if that's not too spoilery to say. And so will those be like these very pointed, intense eye for an eye or family for family kind of situation, or will it be black and white? You know, I didn't want to make that decision, but this is war and we have to make calls. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think that's going to be really interesting. So we just rewatched a couple episodes of season one. And so it was interesting, if you haven't rewatched it in a while, which I hadn't seen it in quite some time, to go back and remember some of that nuance while we're getting glimpses of a couple pretty big moments in season two. Because season one, we talked about this so much, but season one was all about or a lot about like posturing and movement and politics. And season two, at least from my perspective, is going to be a lot about the actual war. So we're going to get a lot of, in my opinion, battle scenes. Like there's going to be just a lot more conflict, physical conflict in this season.
Yeah, the trailer shows that too.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, we get, you know, the first like handful of episodes in the trailer typically. So who knows what like the second half of the season might look like. But, you know, based on the trailer, we've got at least one major battle that we're going to be running into in the first couple of episodes.
Classic GOT behavior.
So, but yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see like the, in the midst of like full blown war and chaos, a lot of the nuance that season one was able to introduce into the story.
Yeah, that's something that I think is easy to forget, but that's really because of the way the adaptation is. And I think also just because of the era that this was written in, that the people that are writing it know a little bit more about TV than the people that were writing TV 12 years ago. And so much of it, you said something like, I don't know if they know how accidentally funny this is, or you said, I love how accidentally funny this is all the time. And those story beats that are laid out in Fire and Blood, you know, they gave Ryan Condal and the writing staff a lot of room to, like, a lot of great scaffolding to be able to write the details within. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like the focus of this really are those turns of your feeling whenever the decision is being made, like how they are whenever they're making these decisions, mm-hmm. like what their vibe is, how they're treating the people around them, and being able to look into their eyes, knowing why they're actually making this choice. And I think one thing that's going to be interesting about season two versus season one is that the people that we really care about in season one aren't completely in power. They're able to do some things, but the implications of their decisions affect so much less of people's lives and about how things are really going to go. But you see at the end of season one that Daemon's addressing the Kingsguard like he's the one that's in charge of them, not just because he has a dragon, but because Rhaenyra's the queen now and he's her prince consort. So both sides are going to be basically the king. Mm-hmm. Both sides have that full rule over their subjects. And so they're going to be the ones leading every meeting. They're going to be the ones that are in charge of every decision. And they're going to be under stress and they're going to be under pressure of time when it comes to making all these decisions. So every little thing that they do is going to be scrutinized as far as who chooses the greens and who chooses the blacks. And I think that we've already shown that folks are split, even with both sides doing things that you as a good person watching television safely at home are not supposed to support. But we're already supporting those things. Look at episode one and how Daemon begins his journey into the center of everyone's hearts,
yeah,
with literally cutting body parts off of people, right, willy-nilly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it doesn't end any differently. And Otto Hightower can have the best posture in the game other than the Night King in some of the cutest outfits. And he can talk of wanting peace for the realm. But at the end of the day, he's going to be there lighting a fire under Aegon's ass to do bad stuff in the name of retaining the power that they've worked so long to hold.
That's the thing that I think is also fun. Now, like you're saying, they're the ones. And also their kids are hyper involved now. So it's not just them. Because before it's like, you know, Aemon and Aegon and like Jace and Luke. They're all kind of like playing at being involved in this like fight, but now they're all empowered to do their own thing. So like we see Aegon on the throne. We see like Jace going off to the north. Like we got clips of that in the trailer, being an envoy trying to make deals, a wheeling and dealing, you know. So I think that this conflict where that basically Otto Hightower started with all of this is bleeding out into all of these people. So we understand why like Alicent and Rhaenyra are like how much this means to them from like a personal standpoint. And then now it's bleeding out into their kids who also have like a personal stake in the game because of the little skirmish that they had, the eye for an eye situation. But still, like they're just inheriting the sins of their fathers, you know? And so I'm particularly excited to see somebody like Jason the North, you know, yeah, talking about his family, because we're going to the North.
Yeah.
The wall.
And it's also like, seeing that in a trailer after all these years.
It's so insanely exciting. And so to see like this conflict branching out and like our young kids going out and how are they going to describe what's happening while we're in these super familiar places from Game of Thrones. I know it's so basic, but we're going to the wall. That is so exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited to do it from the perspective of these writers and filmmakers that are really trying to make this feel like a book.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the blocking, the pacing of the dialogue, especially after the first episode. The first episode, there's a lot of hero shots, a lot of sort of vague setup lines of saying things that have to set the scene. Walk into a room like you've been struggling with pregnancy for days, you know, a lot of those setup moments. But as soon as we get past that, there's so much interesting tracking shot work. There's so much interesting blocking, and there's so much interesting like physical space activity we're making these less known actors do while they build themselves up for a season and then get to blossom into their older, I guess, more fun to watch versions of themselves, now dominating the entire story.
Mm-hmm.
Is a pretty patient way to do it, and that's the way a book sets up characters, right, as well. It's exactly right. The same way. So seeing Winterfell from that perspective, when they've had an entire season to build up to it and years of fanfare to get to that moment, there's going to be a lot of pressure for it to be good.
Well, in a place like Harrenhal, you know,
yeah, exactly.
There's just so many locations. Yeah. I feel like we're really zooming out and like getting to explore Westeros in a bigger way because the story is bigger now.
Yeah, I would have never got to see the Stepstones without a Fire and Blood adaptation.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I would never got to meet the Triarchy otherwise. So, of course, I'm welcoming it. I love the moment from the trailer where it went from Rhaenyra climbing on Syrax to Jace in the north, and it just mm-hmm. looks so much like a Daenerys / Jon Snow
mm-hmm.
transition.
Mm-hmm.
The way that he was wearing his hair and everyone was wearing furs and walking through the snow. So, yeah.
That's the most exciting thing out of this trailer, I would have to say.
Just a glimpse of Winterfell.
Right. Wouldn't you agree? Everyone agree? 100%. Like, what else is more exciting to us than going back? We are going to see a tracking shot, to use your words, of Winterfell. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Of someone walking in.
Yeah.
And it's going to be very familiar. Maybe even the wall we'll see at some point this season, depending on how deep they want to play with those details.
It's going to strike a chord.
For sure. But what you're saying. You're excited about seeing these kids growing up and being the key in the action, and really felt that way at the end of season two, which gets me really excited. At the end of season one, which gets me really excited for the end of season two. Whenever we transition past the battle stuff, again, we're trying to be as the least amount of spoilery as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We have our guesses. We've talked about it on other episodes, but we have our guesses about what the episode layout is going to be. And based off the trailer, like Hannah said, we usually get glimpses of the first handful of episodes. Maybe we get like a shot or two of a moment that's contemplative from something later on in the season. But usually that's all we get, people thinking about something, not actually showing what they're looking at or thinking about. So for the sake of this convo, let's just look at what we know so far. We've been avoiding talking about production leaks on the podcast. We've been reading Duncan Egg in the meantime and other stuff since the last season dropped. But now this is all pretty much common knowledge, so let's talk about it. 8 episodes instead of 10. The season is going to begin on June 16th.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 1, A Son for a Son.
In my mind, it seems to be, and consensus seems to be, that we've got blood and cheese. The north. Midway point is Rook's Rest. Then we've got Dragon Seeds, and then we end at King's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to your point of like, what do we fill all of that time with? I do think if we look at season one, how much ground we covered, we had that big time jump, but we didn't really cover that much ground. Like, time, like we had that big time jump in the middle. But we had 4 episodes for them as kids and then 4 episodes for all hell to break loose, you know? And so I think that we've got an opportunity more so than we did in season one to actually be in Westeros. Because in season one, we were kind of bouncing back and forth between King's Landing, Dragonstone, Driftmark, you know, the hotspots of those people. But now we're trying to win over the realm, so...
Knowing how much the prophecy was spoken about in the last season, I think we're going to get a lot of playing around with tying it into a future era of the show, especially with Dunkin' Egg on the horizon. I think that we're going to get more in the middle of Westeros or at particular locations, like potentially outside of Harrenhal.
Interesting.
Then people might be expecting, because we have 8 episodes at the end of the day to fill here.
Well, because even somebody like Alicent, who's so heavily featured in, obviously, in the Greens trailer, but like she kind of takes a bit of a step back in Fire and Blood.
Right? Yeah, but probably not in the TV
show. But not in the TV show. So yeah. Then we've got her personality.
Walking
to explore.
Around the castle, going to different places. Mm-hmm. How did I get myself in this position? Everybody's mm-hmm. fighting for me, and I don't know if I believe in it that much anymore. Right. It's going to be really exciting. We're like going into this season basically the most confused that we've ever been, though, based on that time schedule. So it seems like if 2 makes sense in the way that you're talking about, the way that it might fit with the remaining seasons following that, there's going to be so much extra content in this. We're not going to know what to do with
especially it. Especially with everything about the Song of Ice and Fire, Prophecy. If we're going to be spending time at the Wall, mm-hmm. there's no way that isn't going to be.
Yeah.
Not that, you know, does Jace know about that? I don't know. Did he get told about that?
Or will
I don't
someone else
think so.
In the North say something
exactly.
about it to him first, and he'll come back with the news?
Yeah, so that's interesting.
And that's just one thing.
Right, and then thinking about Dunkin' Egg. Like, there's so... And we know that these other TV shows are being made,
yeah,
so...
That's so much time to fill.
It's not that much time to fill, though, because you think about, like, season 8 of Game of Thrones, we sped through... I mean, there's no reason. We've got time. So let's meander like we did in early Game of Thrones seasons. That's what we liked about the show. And that's what we liked so much. When you think about like what episodes of season 1 do people love the most?
Driftmark.
That was like everybody's favorite episode. Mm-hmm. And it was not sick dragon shots.
So they're going to double down.
So I think they should. That's what made season 1 successful.
And feel more like a book.
And that's what made the beginning of Game of Thrones so successful. And so that's very exciting to me that... Or we could be wildly wrong because there is a lot more, like I was saying at the beginning of the episode, there is a lot more like physical conflict. There's a lot more dragon fighting. We see like Bela on a dragon in a shot, you know. So who's to say?
I think that's what I'm getting at then is that being separated from it and reading instead of watching and also going off the vibes that the branding, the marketing, the trailers putting out there is that this is, you know, a big... splashy show, but we know that season 1 turned out not really being like that. Like, it definitely had its moments, but the dragons were used so well as characters in the story, less so like CGI props to attract people to come buy a ticket at the local matinee. But again, that's not really the vibe I got from the trailer, especially not from the Team Green versus Team Black thing. It's just so much less subtle than I think what they're going to do. But I guess creating that juxtaposition sets them up for success for when people watch the show. They're like, wow, this is actually like a really good TV show.
I think it's fun.
At the end of the day.
Because I don't think which side are you on? And this is what I was trying to say at the beginning, less eloquently. But I don't think that, are you Team Green or Team Black? I think that, like I said, that fits way more in this type of context than it did of like what Game of Thrones house are you in? Because
yeah,
I think that while we are looking at like a more nuanced thing, they did not do it in a cliche way. They didn't. I don't think they did. I don't think like it was one thing I did think was funny is like the trailer, it's like 5, 6, 7, it's 5 seconds. I'm not going to pretend like I don't have the exact time stamp in front of me, but it's like, the Blacks trailer starts now. I was like, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
In my opinion, the trailers were really good. Like, we got a lot of really great shots of a lot of really exciting scenes. And so they did something that could potentially be cliche. And I think they did a really good job with it. I think it's fun. Let's get the hype going.
I think it's fun too, yeah.
Everybody's premiere parties we can have, like, which side are you on? And it's a really good TV show, so let's have a good time with it.
I'm just glad it's popular enough that something from the story is eking its way out into the way that videos are copy-pasted into mm-hmm. social media platforms. Mm-hmm. That's so neat to me. Mm-hmm. That Team Black and Team Green can go beyond a tweet that got only like 150 votes,
right.
4 or 5 years ago, right. To all these new random Gen Z kids pledging their alliance to Rhaenyra,
their whole life,
or
like,
Alicent,
yeah.
Just because of the way they looked in a picture, like that is cool to me.
Listen, if like no disrespect to anybody who's listening, but if you pledge your whole life to Otto's side,
yeah,
Otto's whole energy is just so, he was cracking me up. I'm so excited to see what he has in store, what other BS he's spouting. But like I was saying, the black side does some pretty messed up stuff early on.
Really horrible stuff.
Blood and cheese. Like, which I'm like, why is everyone so excited to see that?
Because it's cool words.
But I think, yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's like people are like, ooh, nobody knows what this is because it has like a really funny name.
It's even cooler than the Red Wedding. It's like, you know, something's going to happen that's weird there.
Right, right.
It's like, why is it red?
But why are we excited to see that? Because it's so, I'm going to have to look away because
it's going to be brutal.
It's going to be graphic, so graphic. Season one was pretty graphic.
Oh, yeah, it was. It's easy to forget.
It's easy to forget.
Yeah.
I mean, George warned us. He was like,
yeah,
it's going to be a little intense. But, you know, so we're having this greens or blacks. Everyone's pretty much on the black side. But after seeing something so deliberate, and it's going to be interesting to see how they make that call and make that choice happen in season, I mean, episode one, probably. Maybe episode two, probably episode one. Is going to throw that whole debate up into the air. So
tell me what you think. It's easier to like the blacks because people don't like the sneering face of Aegon, and people don't like that Alicent was only Rhaenyra's friend and then figured out a way to make her family the new people that are in charge. Because when it started, they weren't in charge. They just worked there. She did the thing that women don't like, which is, oh, you just used your body to get what you want. Well, we could all do that, but mm-hmm. we don't do that. Oh, but you did that, and then you got the thing, plus you got the sneering faces, and because Rhaenyra seems like she'd be a good hang and probably down, and everyone's making equally weird decisions that people are getting hurt through, and eventually it's going to get to the point, like it was setting it up at the end of season one, where their choices are no longer happening at the family cookout, that it's going to start, this drama is going to start unfolding on a mass scale where other houses are involved, other troops are involved, the structure of buildings when dragons land aren't just going to be taking down the guardrails on the outside of their castles, are going to be taking down houses, buildings, shops. Do you not like sneering faces? Will that, do you not respect how these people stole something from somebody else? Will that stuff weigh up against the actual toll of lives moving forward?
Right.
So I'm thinking of Aegon and Aemon and how they don't care about really anything, but this opportunity has come up. And yeah, I guess they're annoyed at the strong boys, you know, mm-hmm. just a normal like kid annoyance, but I don't think to the point of brutal murder. Like the Aemon reaction gave me so much more light than the fantasy top-down Archmaester Gildane point of view did. And so I think there's a lot more nuance there. But they're young and they're given a lot of power and, and there's a lot of wine.
My delirious milk of the poppy barely alive mm-hmm. husband said it just to me.
And he thought I was his daughter.
Yeah.
And he still touched me weird, which was strange. I don't know how well people are going to vibe as far as choosing sides. No matter how bad the stuff that the blacks do against them, I just don't think the way that the blacks arrive to their points are going to be as cringy for folks that are watching safely at home on their couches.
I think the only saving grace is potentially, like, because I do in some sense feel for Alicent in this situation. I do think that she went over the line with declaring her son to be the king, but I do think that Alicent is in, and I think there could be a lot of sympathy for the position that she was thrust into by her dad.
Oh, for sure.
And so that
it's
might
gross. Wear your mother's dress.
Yeah, that was so creepy. And so I think that that vibe coupled with the ruthlessness of somebody like Daemon, potentially Rhaenyra, may push some people to be a little more sympathetic until we get some big dragon battles.
And they're getting mad all over again.
Unless the way that those play out is similar to the way that Aemon versus Luke played out, which was all an accident.
True.
You know? They just happen to be doing the wrong thing at the wrong time. They're just trying to, you know. So there could be, I think, some argument for that. Potentially. Not from my perspective, but trying to play devil's advocate.
we all kind of know that, like, the cool thing to do would be to give it to Rhaenyra. All these people swore to her. It was a long road for her to get to the point of even getting succession from her father. You know, it makes sense. She's the firstborn kid. The real issue there is the fact that she's a woman. She can't be given succession. If succession is going to be the whole thing that we're fighting over, if succession is going to be the one law that we follow whenever it's convenient, and it has to be really inconvenient, or you have to have a lot of dragons to go up against succession to be the law of the land, then why don't we just follow it?
But that's been her whole storyline since day one. And right. That's why she's so mad at Rhaenyra, is because she's like, here I am playing by the rules. You can't rip the page of the book. We're going to get in trouble. You know, we got to do things like you've always done things your way. Whatever she said to her when she pulled the knife, but how it's always been about you and mm-hmm. your own way of doing things.
She's got an argument that, like, how come Rhaenyra gets to be the person that gets the succession? How come Rhaenyra gets to be the person? Exactly. Yeah, and that's not fair either. That's not so. Yeah. Where's the unfair that we start to have each other's backs for?
Right.
Or these other fake people's backs for begin? Where does the unfair begin? I think it ends at whenever you're yelling about, like, what you deserve, and, like, you're hanging out with Larys in the side room.
I know. Well, that's what Rhaeny says in the trailer. Sneak around and get shit. That's what Rhaeny says in the trailer to Rhaenyra. Let me pull it up. But she says, when the desire to kill and burn takes hold and reason is forgotten, you will not even remember what began the war in the first place.
Yeah.
Because it just is going to continue to get so personal. I get what that's like, you know? Like, it compounds on top of each other. But even Otto at the end is like, hey guys, come on, just follow us.
Yeah.
And it'll be fine.
Yeah. They got anointed by a real septon.
Yeah. He has all the trappings of power. He has his sword.
Yeah. He's got his name,
his sword, and his crown. And everybody saw it. So let's just relax.
Yeah. But you guys want to kill people over this? Yeah,
so.
It's going to be fun.
I really think that the Greens are going to become more sympathetic.
That's interesting. I mean, I don't think that they're going to be able to pull it off unless there's a lot of stuff we don't know about when it comes to BNC.
I do think that that situation is going to make the Greens really sympathetic. I think that the way they're going to do it.
I think so, too. I just think they're going to have to do it in a cool way.
Yeah. Well, I think.
In a way that I'm not smart enough to be able to even guess.
Right. Like I said, I think the Rook's Rest situation, I think all of that is going to make.
It might play out in a way where you like the Greens.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm trying to say.
Very interesting.
Because if we look
me.
At who
Especially,
gets
like,
injured,
who wins. Yeah.
Is that going to make him more sympathetic after he's
okay,
injured?
Okay, too far.
Should we break down what kind of happens in the Blacks trailer?
Let's do it.
The Blacks trailer starts now. So funny. I'm going to try to make this as high level as the Greens was. Basically, the gist, in my opinion, of this whole trailer is really shots of Rhaenyra looking longingly over a lot of different places, saying
I wish this
a
was
lot
my
of things
land.
to, as she's trying to rally her troops. So it seems to me like, I mean, we start off with Luke's funeral. We're at Storm's End. And then we get this really interesting and cool shot of Harrenhal, which a lot of people are calling out as seeing the Isle of Faces on there. So that's a place we've never been to in Game of Thrones before. Are we going to really be able to spend time there?
Maybe not now.
Maybe not now, but it's cool to, like, get a glimpse of that. It seems to me another piece that was interesting a little bit later on in the trailer was we get Alicent and Helaena in mourning. Mm. It's like we said, I felt like the Greens trailer had a ton of Rhaenyra and company in it, but the Blacks trailer did not really have that many shots.
That's the coldest thing you've said this whole episode.
Well, the Blacks trailer didn't really have that much of the Greens in it, to be honest. And so I know we get like bits of Otto in there, but really that's it with them. So that is interesting to me. And then there's just a ton of battle, like what I talked about. This season is going to be filled with a lot of dragon fighting, and so it seems like we get a lot of that through the second half of the trailer. So, like you've been saying, there's a lot of really cool places that we're going, and I felt like the trailer did a really good job of
teasing,
showcasing and teasing some pretty big moments from the books without calling them out at all. And this is just the first half of the season.
Yeah.
So
that's why I was intrigued by the lack of footage, because I don't know what's going to happen even though I know what's going to happen, I don't know exactly how it's going to be adapted, how much detail we're going to get on the sides. And obviously, it's going to be enough to fill a TV series, but it's quite a tall order. And I'm really impressed that this was the way that they chose to approach it, because it didn't really seem, you know, at the last stages of GOT, it didn't really seem like there was a lot of patience left for all the grind. There's literally no way that they can make 8 episodes of this without there being some thoughtful channels that, like I said, we haven't even really thought about yet. And so much of the discourse online in the years of GOT was dominated with all the options that they had. Here's what they could do. There's really none of that for House of the Dragon.
Right.
And it's not because House of the Dragon's less popular. It's because there's less obvious stuff to go off of. And they are doing the work in a lab. And it's pretty interesting.
So we only got what? 3 months? 2.5 months, I guess, until premiere date.
So, mark your calendars. June 16th, A Son for a Son. Hot D, episode 1.
Yes.
Hannah, what was your own of the trailer?
Wow. What a question to ask. My first own is very obvious, is what we've been talking about, the North. I'm so freaking excited about that. I'm so glad that we're going to be there long enough for it to warrant a place in the trailer. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out. So that's my own to that. My other own is cliche, as always, though calling out the most obvious thing that we've been talking about, but the Wall in Winterfell. I'm so happy that there is enough content of that to be featured in the trailer, because we got one of those shots in the teaser trailer of them like walking through the woods, but then we got the wall in this trailer. And so we're continuing to build on the Winterfell content. Call me basic. I cannot wait to go back there. I cannot wait to see. I can't wait for the music to swell. I can't wait for all of that. I'm so excited. And I hope that it seems as if we might spend a little bit of time there. So that's my own to the North.
I don't think it's basic. I think it's good. And I'm going to pick that as one of my owns,
really?
Too. Yeah, my second one's going to be even more basic if you're someone who thinks they're cool about reading books. The God's Eye.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And the Isle of Faces,
uh-huh.
For obvious reasons. Thanks for adapting it finally on screen. We get that wide shot of Harrenhal.
Now, whenever we talk about it on the podcast, we'll have a picture to show of it.
Exactly.
Those are our owns. And now let's get into yours.
Thanks to everyone for sending in your owns for this trailer, the drop on a Thursday. On Instagram, from Shmurda. Own to whomever just pooped in my pants while watching that, parentheses, it me. Thank you.
Katie Chiver says, own to the subtle hints at blood and cheese. It will be truly gut-wrenching.
Mikey McCann, 555, owned to Daemon for sitting on his dragon and offering kneeling or death. Pure power move. We back.
Lauren Maselli, owned to 2 times the trailers.
M. Jernigan Art, owned to Amon One Eye for thinking that fight will end well. Crying emoji, wilded out, shaky emoji.
Adri Solis Lopez owns to the first trailer featured being Team Black, because we are number one.
Alana Slater owned to that not-so-subtle Aemon vs. Daemon foreshadowing. Eyeball emoji.
Joe Alonis owned to Aegon Frey, as he is as fearsome as the rest.
Seth 410 on Twitter owned for the attempt to make people think the Greens are in the right anyway. Noticing a thread here.
Yeah. Phil So Good says, own to my boss for thinking I'll be doing any more work today while I watch the trailers on repeat.
Unholy Kev on Twitter owns for Alicent underwater and Queen Rhaenyra in her Dany collection dress. I hear you.
At Ghost Chase Killa, own to HBO for the hype.
Thanks for the hype, HBO. We appreciate that. And lastly, to at Nice Queen Cersei. Drownescent gets their own. Also, a gentle reminder from Sanrixian.
We retweeted Sanrixian has some pretty great team t-shirts, so take a look at those.
Team Rhaenyra and Team Aegon for the occasion. If you feel like it's important to choose a side this early.
It seems like we have to.
Fine.
Seems like we have to.
So are you Team Black or are you Team Green? Please let us know. You don't only have to send us owns. It would be interesting to know what y'all think. So we'll put a prompt for that up on Insta at random intervals, because maybe you'll have a different feeling on a different day, as season two has not yet made it to our screens. Hannah, are you ready to do some Dunkin' Egg?
I'm so ready.
We'll be back next week with part two of the final published Dunkin' Egg story, The Mystery Night. Part two of The Mystery Night. Listen to our last episode if you want to know exactly where we left off. You can send Owens for that as well. We're going to be finishing The Mystery Night before our Hot D coverage begins, and it will begin.
Let's get it.
By the gods.